Sí.
So I'll start because it's 1:34. And as you heard, we're recording this because a lot of times people can't make it, but they like to hear what we talk about. So that's why things are being recorded. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I get the pleasure of running all these affinity groups. We have 25 now. And Dina stepped up and stepped into this role. We've been trying to figure out how to best make this community program and outreach professionals work. And we came up with this. Well, Dina came up with this. I shouldn't take any responsibility. The idea to have each meeting be on a specific topic. So this meeting was going to be on family life education programs. So let's see what we got. We know that Leah said she was had a program to share, but maybe all of us do. But Dina, take it away. And everyone just put in their community, right click and put in their community so we know where
Okay.
everyone's calling in from. That'd be great.
So I'm happy to be here. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina at Jewish Family Services. And I know some of you, others are new. And I do outreach and I don't know, I think all of our titles are a little different and we wear multiple hats. I do outreach and community programming. I tend to do a lot of programming with our older adult services, just because that's sort of we're heavy on services in that area in my agency. And again, we wanted to talk about family life programming. We're such a small group. So, I know, Leah, you had a program you were going to talk about. And if we, and I think if we have time, if anyone else has something they want to add in that area, if not, I know like the world is changing every single day. And if you guys want to use this time to talk about how you're dealing with these daily changes, let's use that as well. So let's see. Welcome, Leah.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
To see you. So I'm the Family Life Education Manager at JFCS in Minneapolis. If you can't hear me, let me know. I may feel like my speaker is not really working that well. So just tell me.
We can hear you.
And okay, good. So, well, there were two different events that I thought I could briefly speak to. The first one had to do with an ongoing event that has been over this past academic year, and it's ending in August. So we have one more session this coming in 2 weeks. But essentially, I've done a lot of trainings as the Family Life Education Manager for teachers and counselors, and specifically preschool teachers. I've worked a lot with like the staff at preschools and the teachers themselves. And so I've done that for the past 3 years, and then it kind of developed into something bigger because I was doing similar trainings at different preschools that are all in the Twin Cities. And I mostly work in the Minneapolis side, but and if you've done any work in the Twin Cities, things are kind of like divided by the river in a very strange and artificial way. And I'm from Chicago, so when I moved here, I was like, oh, St. Paul, that's not far, but it's like a different world once you've been here for a while. It was really cool because I had this relationship established with preschool administrators. And then they came to me and they said, would you be interested in doing trainings for all of us as a group? And so we developed a program where I would do a monthly training for a group of eight different preschools across the Twin Cities, all Jewish preschools. And they would all the teachers would come on Zoom. So we would have up to like 80 people on the call on any given month. And it was really nice because it was efficient. So I could do one training and all the people could come. And I didn't have to prepare and do it again separately, like, you know, next week for a different group.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Was it pre-COVID, post-COVID, when you were doing all this training?
I've been doing trainings for the past 3 years, but this specific monthly training started last year, so during
COVID.
COVID. So it was all, that's why we could do it all online. It happens in the evening. So it's like a 7:30 to 8:30 on a Thursday night time. And so it was really nice as a family life educator, it's hard to be reacting to like, oh, what am I going to do now? What's happening next month? I'm going to plan something. And then all of a sudden I'm super busy, or then there's like nothing going on for a few weeks. And so this was really nice because I knew what to expect. Every month we had it at the same time. I knew what the general topic was going to be, so I could prepare for it ahead of time. I could bring other experts in if I needed to, and had time to like actually be thoughtful about that and not just reacting super quickly in the moment. And then it was originally, we're like, okay, we'll be paid $150 per time. And then they got a grant for it, so they were able to pay me every month. And then they've just asked to renew it again for next year.
What are you teaching them?
So all sorts of different things. Like we talk about self-care for teachers. We talked about professional boundaries. We've talked about anti-racism. We talked about creating gender-inclusive classrooms. We brought in someone who works specifically with inclusion and disability. So she presented to them. I work with a therapist at JFCS, and we talked about talking to children about difficult issues. So based on things that they had requested from me, and then they were also asked for suggestions about, you know, what should we do? And so then I have a list of all these trainings that I have done or could do. And so then we would talk about it.
Did you say these are the preschool directors or the teachers that you're?
Both. Yeah.
And then you said did the teachers get paid to be on the call?
No, I'm not sure if the teachers were paid to be on the call, but it's required of them. So I'm assuming, and I never asked that. That's a good question. But I'm assuming that they were positively compelled in some way, because most all of them are there.
Right now, your microphone is not great.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
They were positive. Somehow they were compelled to be there, because most times, you know, we had more than 70 people at the trainings. So out of 80 something. So
that's amazing.
Well, here's what I'm stuck on. I don't know what other people think. Are you a social worker by training?
I'm not.
So you're not. Are you a teacher by training?
I am.
Oh, so you're a teacher by training. Okay. Because I wondered what the skill was, you know, to be the trainer. You know, they asked you to do it, you know, and then you brought in people if you were talking about, I guess, clinical issues or something like that, because I got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That was a really good, you know, way to pivot and do something that was meaningful for this, you know, Twin Cities and your agency. That's good.
Mm-hmm. And are you planning to continue? I mean, we're not post-COVID, but... In the fall?
Yeah. So they have asked to continue, and it'll be the same. It'll be on Zoom, regardless of what happens, you know, COVID-wise.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing, I think, for all of us program, you know, community programmers, because I think that Zoom is the new way of just reaching out.
Yeah.
Being with, you know, community members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's nice easier. To think how you can have a relationship, you know, with whoever, and then think about how you might transition it into something that's more ongoing and meeting a need that they have. And so that was a nice thing that made me think about how to transition some of my other work that way too. Mm-hmm.
So are these all Jewish preschools, like true temples or JCCs?
Yep.
Okay. That's really interesting. And you were serving them before in a different way before COVID?
Some of them, yeah. For some of them, they would ask me, say, to come in during their teacher training week before school started, or if there was an issue they were experiencing, they might ask us to come in and say, you know, do an hour-long session on communication or something like that.
Okay.
So it was more sporadic.
All right. So this is like, it was like, in a way, COVID, you know, kind of presented this opportunity to centralize your message. Like an ongoing.
And she's only making 150 with 80 people. If they were paying 36 a piece or 18 a piece times 80, you know, the agency would be getting a lot more money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's very interesting, because that's a deal.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it is.
I wonder, you know, what other people have experienced in this. Because I'm new, fairly new in this role, just being 3 years. And the person who was in the role before was like 28 years or something. And they didn't have like a fee for service model so much as they would just provide trainings for free. Right. Which is, you know, very nice and good. And that's how they did it. But it's like, I think it's important to attach some monetary value to the expertise.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Can I ask which foundation is funding you?
It's the funding came through the Jewish Federation of Minneapolis.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot of preschools. It sounds like 8, you know, that's a lot. And some of our communities, there aren't clearly as many.
Right.
You know, I don't know. So that was good. That's a good one. You know, just thinking outside the box. And
what I think is interesting is just these opportunities that are getting presented by Zoom that we just didn't frame them this way before, of how to reach out. That, right, like if Leah was going to all over the Twin Cities and putting on this workshop, maybe different variations of it, you know, weekly, monthly, whatever you were doing, but now you have this like a sort of a new centralized type service and some consistency.
You know, right, because nobody did it. Not everyone had.
No one did it.
Right. No one even thought about it. You know, and now that we are thinking about it, we're in it, it's really hard to go back, because especially when you think about telehealth, nobody wants to go into offices anymore. Everyone, therapists want to stay at home, and patients, you know, want to stay at home to get their services. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really changed a lot.
Yeah. And I also think like for communities that are spread out.
Yeah.
It's an interesting opportunity. We're seeing that like, especially with seniors in the Raleigh area, that people are moving sort of on the outskirts of the city, especially with some of the older adults, and just to be able to grab from different areas of people. You know, there's also accessibility issues, there's health issues, there's transportation.
Right.
That if you can get over the technology piece and train people, then you have this, you have a way of reaching people. And if they can, you know, if they feel engaged.
Right. So Jody, tell us, you're like programming queen over there in Ottawa. So what are some of the programs that you have done?
So this group is interesting because we're opening this new children's services. So we don't do family life education yet, but we're starting to move in that direction as we open children's services. So as a Judaic coordinator, I handle all of our holiday, you know, Jewish holiday and cultural programming for our residents and for our day program attendees. I also manage our choir. You know, I work with the choir director on that, and they do trips and programs and projects. And we do periodically engage the families for a certain program. We have a Hanukkah party every year pre-COVID that all the families came to. And then we had what we call the third Seder at Passover time that all the families came to. And actually Zoom made it super interesting. So last 2020, we didn't do the Seder because it was so close to the start of all the action that it was like hugely overwhelming and near impossible. But we did it on Zoom this year. And we had many more people attending than normally attend, which is interesting because this is it's a big event. And we tried to emulate the in-person experience as much as possible. So everything was fully catered as it would have been in person. And people came and collected pre-prepared food boxes of Seder meals. We gave everyone like a Seder plate with all of the supplies one needs for a Seder, you know, in addition to all that. And it was really, really nice where we delivered. If people, some of our residents are older, and so their parents are quite elderly, so not all of them can get out. So we made sure that everyone got what they needed. And then we kept the community engagement as high as possible. So we asked people ahead of time to lead parts, just like you would in a regular Seder around the table, to take parts and lead parts. And we made sure that it was, a really even split between the people we support and family members who were visiting. you know, just like we would have in person, we hired clergy people to help sort of run the show and to give words of Torah and different things. And it was, but the nice thing about Zoom is we did some other fun things. We incorporated some videos. So instead of for like the 10 plagues, instead of just like saying it out loud and dipping your finger, we actually played a video that like uh-huh. had a whole animation thing. It was like a live movie looking thing. It wasn't terribly dark. Like, that was the thing. The plagues can go really dark really quick. This wasn't terribly dark, but there was like a 2-minute video that I found of the plagues. And so we sort of dipped along with the video. Mm-hmm. So we tried to incorporate some multimedia aspects to it. And I have to say, as someone who is not the most tech savvy, I needed a nap after that program was over. I had like 2 computers and 2 monitors going and I'm switching between, oh my God, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but it went off. But as we move into children's services, obviously that family engagement is even more critical. So what we're trying to do is, well, a few different things, but one of the big pieces is we want to train up older teens or young adults to be what we're calling integration aides for children with special needs to help their families engage with the community as a family. So often parents of children with special needs divide and conquer. One parent stays home with the child who may not be able to tolerate the activity that the other kids may want to go to, mm-hmm. or the child with special needs gets left with a grandparent, or the family comes and only stays for 20 minutes before somebody has a meltdown and they leave. And we want to try to help families go to events together. So we're not calling them shadows because that's just not a helpful term, right? Nobody needs an extra shadow. We all come with our own. But what they do need is maybe someone who can help them work on skills and someone who gets to know the child and gets to know where their strengths are and where their growth areas are ahead of the events and can be the person that allows the family to feel more like a family. So for example, there's a local synagogue that has a very big Hanukkah party every year, obviously pre-COVID. Bounce castles, DJ, balloons, streamers, very overwhelming for some children with sensory challenges, very overwhelming. So you can't please everybody all the time, but I know the synagogue tried really hard to have like a quiet room available for children who needed to take a break from the noise. They also, you know, and that was great for some children, but there are just some children who even that was too much for them and the families ended up leaving. Mm-hmm. So how can we support the family in being able to take part in this event? Maybe the integration aid stays with the child, or maybe the integration aid can help keep the child in the room mm-hmm. in a different way. I don't know. It's all sort of being thought out and planned. And we're trying to see like how, you know, how can we help families function as families, period. You know, bottom line.
Sounds like you have to train integration specialists unless you already have them. And are
no,
they
we're going to train them.
Are they volunteers? Are they getting paid?
We're going to pay them.
You're paying them.
Yeah, what you uh-huh. pay for.
Okay.
Uh-huh. We're going to uh-huh. pay them. There is a system in Ontario of kids needing to do volunteer hours to graduate from high school.
Right.
So that's an option. However, we really would prefer to pay them for a number of reasons. Number one, the commitment level is higher.
Much.
Number two, the volunteer hour is quite minimal. They only need 40 hours to graduate and they often do it in their 9th grade year and then they're gone. And we don't want 14-year-olds. We want more the 16, 17, even 18-year-olds if we can find that. Right. And we also have the system here. I'm from the States originally, so I'm learning a lot of how the sort of post-high school world here works myself. When they say college here, it's more what Americans would think of as community college. It's more vocational 2-year training programs mm-hmm. for a variety of things. And then university is your standard 4-year degree. And there's a big okay. distinction here. If you say I all the time will say college by mistake uh-huh. When I'm talking about where my son is going off to school next year. But the college, there's a local college here that has a youth and family specialist
Perfect.
Training
so you can
program
get some.
And PSW programs. So we actually have access to students in training who can get hours and experience, you know, through the programs we're offering. They would need to be, for them, the training would be more on the cultural piece, right? If you're accompanying a family to Shabbat services, let's say, which a lot of kids, typical challenge, doesn't matter. A lot of kids can't sit through services. But maybe there's a family service that day and the family wants to come and one of their children struggles with sitting still and maybe needs someone to sort of support them at the back of the room while they also play with toy. I don't know, like Right. So
well, the, it sounds to me like you're really thinking about, yeah. you know, very creative ways to, you know, get the needs met of your families and your clients. And although you've been around 40 years, right, this is something that
brand new
thought of recently, and this is what you think is really important. I mean, I think the hardest part for you in this, this is what I think, is training, getting the integration specialists and then training them because every child is so different, right? So yeah. that's, I think, going to be the hard part, but that's probably what your specialty is at Tamir. So maybe it
right.
won't be so difficult, you know?
And we have, and we're working with outside consultants to help us create those trainings, to do those trainings. Like, sure. we know where.
Well, that's better than that.
Right. So we got a new executive director a year ago.
Okay,
and so that's what's brought on a lot of the trainings and a lot of the new programming, as well as we're in the middle of a strategic plan looking at the current way we provide services. Do we need to modernize? Do we need to change? The answer is yes. You know, but we're trying to get, you know, good hard data behind that so that we can get our staff and our board and our supporters sort of on board with what we want to do.
That's great. That's really great.
So it's really busy. It's really exciting at Tamir, but you know, I'm hoping through these affinity groups to get ideas and resources. And
that's great. That's such an interesting model. Have you seen it somewhere else in Canada or the States, of this idea of supporting families as a family as opposed to the serving the individuals?
So it's yes and no. So we have had for years a program where we provided shadows, is what they were always called, for kids at camp. So mm-hmm. that particular, while we're funded by the Ontario government for most of the services that we provide, our Judaic programming is funded by our federation largely, and then some external grants that we get from other Jewish foundations. So for years, we've provided a program to send shadows with kids with special needs to the JCC camp. So this is really an expansion of that program. So the whole idea behind that is help the kid integrate into camp and have the most typical summer that they can, and to just feel like a kid and just feel like a camper and yeah. just go about their business. So it's really come as a spin-off on that. Like, how do we take that idea and apply it the rest of the year, and what would be the most helpful way to do it?
Hmm. And did that come from your board, the families, staff?
The new ED.
So I think that the idea to expand it to year round has always sort of been floating in the air somewhere, but nobody had sort of the bandwidth to like pull it out of the sky and put it on the ground. And the new ED says, no, we have to do this. She has a very strong background in children's services. So I know that she's done similar programming and has, you know, very strong background in doing it. And the adults are really more the newer piece for her. Although she has tons of experience with that as well, but children are her personal passion and background. So a lot of it comes from there, and she doesn't come from too far away. She's just moved from Montreal. So she has a lot of her, which is a much bigger Jewish community with just many more resources. I mean, they have about 90,000 Jews in Montreal, and we have 15,000. So vastly different community sizes. So she comes with sort of friends and colleagues and associates in her back pocket that we can utilize. And especially now, again, being on Zoom, the distance feels even smaller between, it's only a 2-hour drive between the two communities.
Well, you know, when you were talking, Lynn, you were nodding your head. I don't know if you have a similar program or if you work with children with disabilities in Detroit.
No, well, so I, first of all, I'm on the older adult side myself, I was thinking about is what an incredibly needed program this is. And I think it's fantastic. And I was making notes on who to pass it on the family life side for our agency. But I'm also curious. So we have a friendship circle here. Is that something that, right? So I am not clear whether this would be a JFS program or if it would be duplicating efforts by the Friendship Circle. So the Friendship Circle here is a very large, very strong organization that's sole mission is to help children with special needs and their families. So, yeah.
So we have a Friendship Circle here too. It's very, very small, but my understanding of their programming, because I know one of their board members is, it's more like a big brother, big sister, and it's a one-on-one.
And it's in partnering. The home, I thought.
At home. Oh, I don't know if it's at home or they go out. But it's not sort of community integration. We also have another unique program run by a different Chabad, called A Ripple Effect. And he utilizes teenagers, teenage volunteers to be, again, partnered one-on-one with a child or a sibling of a child with special needs to do sort of, they don't do individual activities in the way a Big Brother, Big Sister program would, but each child has their own buddy, but then they all do group events, whether that was in person or on Zoom.
You know, I'm listening to what you're talking about, Jody.
So this is really not a duplication, yeah.
And I'm thinking something really strange. You know, you guys probably know I was an executive director of an agency. It doesn't really make any difference, but the ripple effect would be great for respite. Like, you know, yeah. when you, people who are working with seniors, potentially creating some sort of program where there could be a respite program for people who are taking care of a senior, where the teenager or someone could come in and be in the homes, and the, you know, the caretaker could go out grocery shopping or on a date, you know, or something. Like, I don't know. I was just thinking, it sounds like it could work also for seniors, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Anything you do, it takes a lot of time to begin, you know, to understand it, to train people to do it. And, you know, it's not just as simple as me saying this. It takes a lot of effort and time to do it, but it can be done.
Yeah.
You know, people start programs all the time. So are you doing anything exciting, Lynn?
Just tons and tons of virtual presentations. It feels like that need is not shrinking now that we're into year two, but it seems to be expanding. And yeah. I think for us, you know, the most common requested are stress management, which goes by other names, but it's stress management essentially, and brain health and dementia-based programming, understanding like what when to be concerned, what's a normal age-related change versus what's a sign of dementia, tips for caregivers, caregiver stress, you know, managing caregiving during times of social isolation. It seems like those needs are continuing. So 2020 seems to be just turning into 2021. I think what's different on our part is that we're usually we have done these presentations as just things we host ourselves, right? But it seems that more and more synagogues are coming to us to host a series. Mm. And some of our sisterhood, our sister agencies under the Federation are coming to us to provide series of trainings for their staff on some of these topics, boundaries as well. So that's really what we're doing.
Well, that's great. Are you getting paid for it, JFS Detroit? No.
So the interesting thing is I did used to charge for presentations, but we waived those fees during the pandemic.
Yeah.
We just felt like, you know, so many people were struggling that we dropped that. So I was interested to hear, you know, Jody's take on it, which is different. So I'll take that feedback back.
Well, I think that it's time for agencies to start charging again, just because this could be the future, right? This really could be the future. And maybe it's time to start. I'm not saying to charge 150 a pop, but whatever, 18, you know, or something, so that there's, so that the agency continues to stay afloat with some fees for service. But what about, you talk, Dina. I don't need to be talking too much.
I actually think, Lynn, that was, it's interesting. Do you keep like a list of topics that JFS will present on for synagogues and sister agencies?
So yes, it's not thorough with the whole, with everyone in the agency. It just seems like people will reach out. They'll call our resource center and they kind of seem to know what they need. They don't know what we call our presentation, right? But they would say, you know, our congregants are really struggling caring for aging parents. And then that call gets put through to me. And so when I'm talking to that person, I'm just thinking what's the best fit and making suggestions, and we settle on it that way. So it's not a formal process yet. It's just been informal word of mouth. One of our goals right before the pandemic was to kind of make a formal speakers bureau for the agency. And it just got pushed aside in all the expanding Meals on Wheels, you know, all the crisis work that had to happen. But I think it's a good reminder to pick that back up again.
Would you call it a formal speakers bureau?
A speakers bureau, right.
A really smart idea, actually.
Yeah, it was on my agenda and I have not gotten to it.
When you get to it, will you let us know? I would love to see your.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea
to share with this group. And maybe, you know, like what you're saying, Lisa, that's a way to formalize like what the agency has to offer and this fee for service idea.
Yeah.
Saying this is, you know, this is a speaker's bureau.
Right.
Like,
and, you know, speaking
have experts in their field,
synagogues, right? So you could do the same presentation at different synagogues so that it still is a community at the synagogue and not some larger event where people might not feel as free to share whatever thoughts they may have, but that you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time because you have something on caregiver stress that you can
absolutely
do here, there, and everywhere. It's really a smart move.
It's more a little tweak here, but one of the interesting things with Zoom for us, and I'm sure you've all found this, is the only way it's really changed is that audiences are from all over the place. Right. So a Hadassah group in Florida reaches out because somebody's sister heard a presentation at the Detroit Hadassah group. Right. So that's what's different. And then that becomes a question with fees as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we were to do something in the local community and waive that fee because our federation dollars, right, are in part to support the local community, that wouldn't likely be true if we're speaking to a group somewhere else. Right.
Right. So that seems much easier to justify.
Yes.
Yeah. It's outsider. No, it was Jody who asked about attendance for virtual events.
Sorry, I just see it right now. It was Leah.
Leah. Yeah, I'm just curious because we've had ups and downs with that.
Exactly the same. You know, some months it seems like there's 60 people every time I look at the participant number. Others, 10. You know, so it really varies and it seems to vary truthfully with how much outreach does the hosting body do. So if it's a presentation that we're hosting, we're pushing it out there. But if it's put on by a synagogue, we're really not doing it. We put it in our you know, JFS social media pages, right? But it depends on how effective is that hosting body at sending it out. So Hadassah is wildly successful at that. We have 80, 100, 110 people at those presentations. Yeah. How about for everybody else? What are you finding?
Leah, what are you finding?
So we had an event last week, like a panel event where we had a pediatrician, an epidemiologist, and a therapist. And then we had about 25 people on the call attending, and then people will watch it as a recording. So I don't know. We haven't tracked that yet. We probably will, but I'm guessing there'll probably be at least 25 more views from there. But a while ago we canceled events because we had maybe two people signed up for a community event or eight. And then, you know, right, if it's free and 8 or 10 people sign up, half of them aren't going to show up. So then we're like, okay, I guess we'll just cancel because I personally do not like being in a call where there's like I'm teaching or someone else is teaching and there's like two people. Like I just find that to be really awkward and not very good use of time. So we've stopped doing so many community events virtually, just and we'll put on the event like if someone's asking us to or it's a unique circumstance, because other I just don't like dealing with that kind of in between, like should we do it?
So when you do your advertising for the community program, do you say minimum number of participants, 10, in order for program to continue?
We hadn't in the past, but going forward, when we do that again, we probably will because, it would be better probably to record something and then just send it out to the participants rather than have kind of a, I don't know, awkward Zoom space where, you know, you have 20 minutes for questions and there's one question and two people. So, it's just we're still navigating.
I've seen that a lot recently. That people are saying minimum number of participants, 15, or whatever it is that they choose to say. And so at least then people understand when you write them the day before, or whatever you say the deadline is, that there's that you're not going to be having it, right?
At least, you know, that's a good idea, Lisa. I think we used to do that with in-person programs, and we weren't doing it for Zoom because people were so last minute. And figured
right.
But you're right. It's awkward. It's awkward. Or I get people last minute say, just send me the recording. I can't join.
Yeah.
And then that's your majority, it's
right. I think we've all gotten kind of lazy. Like I sign up for different things in my role. I have to, and then I go at the last minute, oh, I have something else I have to do. I'll listen to the recording. Right. And I know I do it, so I'm sure other people do it too. And it's just gotten easier. It's just gotten easier. And
I'm a little obstinate about that, unless people really strong arm, I don't allow the presentations to be recorded. Because really? I feel like significantly, well, for two reasons. Number one, I like participation. So we don't do them in webinar mode. We can see people's faces. And that means you can see people's names. And so the HIPAA concerns come to mind for me. So that's, I think people are much more likely to share a story if it's not recorded in that way. So that's the reason that I lead with. But the other reason is I think that it's too easy for people to not come and just ask for the recording. But so I don't know that that's a popular position. It's just the one. Now, if somebody really says.
But you know, I love that position. If you want to know the truth, Lynn, this is because if you had written that in something, this will not be recorded. You know, that's very different than what we normally do. Everyone expects it to be recorded. So when I write someone, it happened to me once and I wrote them, you know, if I have the recording, they said, we didn't record it. I said, you didn't record it. And they didn't record it. So I think that that's a really smart way to get people involved. And it's not like I don't ever go to anything. It sounds like I don't, but that's not true. I do, but sometimes I don't. And I didn't for this one.
I agree with Lynn. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I agree with Lynn about not recording. You know, I see Zoom as a necessary tool given the times we're living in. And in the way that this affinity group would probably not be, I don't know what it would be if it wasn't Zoom. Maybe you always did it on Zoom or some other platform. But so it is a great way to bring people together. But if you were doing a live lecture, it wouldn't be recorded and you wouldn't have access. Right. And when you think about the space needed to save the recording, and what are you going to do? You know, saving it for posterity, like what are you going to do with it? Who's really going to watch it? Maybe one, maybe two people, but most people who ask for the recording don't actually watch it. I don't think. And I agree. I think, you know, something is live. It's live.
You guys are programmers. So, you know, this is a conversation that I think is important to think about and to have, because, you know, what do we do? Tara, you were nodding your head too. What are you thinking? Because you work in with domestic violence. Is that what you... I can't remember.
No, I'm the clinical director at our JFS in Albany, New York, but most of my experience was directing programs for families that are grieving. So this was before the pandemic, but we would do a lot of support groups where we would be running four groups concurrently, which is very resource intensive as far as you need four facilitators, you need four people as backup, whether they're volunteers or interns. And then you also need four rooms that are available in the same building at the same time that are confidential and safe. But we run four at the same time because one would be for the parents or adults or caretakers. One would be for 3 to 5 year olds. One would be K through sixth grade. And then the last is 6 through 12. So that the whole family was getting support services at the same time, which was really nice because you didn't have to worry about childcare. As long as the children weren't under 3 years old or so. And in those cases, we would ask for additional volunteers to provide childcare for toddlers and young infants. But it was really nice because everyone was getting support at the same time, but not together. I have run family support groups with parents and caretakers with the children. But I find that anytime like a question was asked, the kids would just look at the parents and then the parents would answer. So this was an opportunity for everyone in the family to be around peers their own age going through similar things and get their own support within that developmental age. And then at the end of group, we would all come together and do some kind of closing with everyone present and share, you know, what they did in their own group or what they learned or whatever they wanted to share. And that was that program was called Wave Riders. And similarly, I was director for another program for grieving families called Camp Aaron, which was a weekend overnight camp. It wasn't a summer camp. It was just a weekend overnight, like Friday through Sunday, two nights, where the children ages, it was 5 to 17 years old, would spend the weekend away from home and in cabins, same thing. The cabins were split up by age and have a weekend of lots of fun filled activities. But how we got the families involved, the parents and caretakers involved, was we would have an ice cream social before camp. And we would split up, same thing, the children were in one room and the adults were in another room. And so that's where we would really provide our psychoeducation to the adults on how children grieve differently than adults, how to support your children, how to take care of yourself, like if you're also grieving, and good self-care, and just grief is natural, normal, and messy and complicated, and not just sadness, it's anger and it's guilt and it's all these things. And then there would be camp. And then after camp, we actually asked the parents to arrive about an hour before the children got back from camp and talk about what things they might see as their children are coming back from camp. So in other words, we talked about a lot of really vulnerable things all weekend long, like feelings and memories. And so we may have stirred the pot a bit. So you might see things actually get a little worse before they get better. And by things, I mean behaviors like regression, you know, like a child that may have been very independent might be more dependent on you, asking you to help them get dressed or help them with packing their lunch or whatever it might be, or wanting more cuddle time, or the opposite, wanting more alone time. So just talking about some behaviors that are very common grief reactions in children and how to support your children. But that's kind of how we snuck in that psychoeducation. We did try like one-off workshops, like just how to support grieving children, but they were not well attended. The biggest issues being childcare. Again, this was all before the pandemic, so it wasn't, everything was really in person. So to find childcare for your children so you can get an hour of psychoeducation at a certain location, if it was a half an hour away, was very difficult. A lot of these families had lost their partners, so they're now single income. So transportation was an issue, gas money was an issue, childcare was an issue. So now it's very, very different with virtual. But we've had the best luck when it was like concurrent services, even virtually. So virtual groups could be a virtual group for the children while parents or guardian group is running concurrently for the adults. So it's like a family approach. We're in this together, even not grief, just like any issue, like it affects the whole family. I'm going to do my group while you do your group, and it works really well. Yeah.
I think it's terrific. So you could have everyone come together, do the breakout rooms, right?
That's right. Exactly. I mean, it's
so, that's such a great idea. Thank for clinical services.
Yeah.
How to approach clinical services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it takes away from, and I don't know if other JFSs have had this happen, but sometimes families will be like, here is my child. They are driving me crazy. Fix them. And it's like, wait a minute, we need to talk about this as a family. So it's kind of a gentle way to bring services to the whole family if they're not ready or willing to do family counseling or individual counseling. So that
are you charging, Tara?
So groups, so groups are a suggested donation of $10, which I think is very little, but very few donate even that. So that's a big challenge, is you know, just having the groups be sustainable financially. And then for individual counseling, we are in the process of being credentialed and paneled, so we're not quite there yet. So right now it is fee for service, $50 for individuals, $75 for families or couples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely encourage everyone to start charging.
Yeah.
You know, group fee for $10 a session, and you probably what have 12 week groups or something, or they're ongoing?
We do 6 to 8 weeks. We do six to eight weeks because that's less of a commitment, but families are welcome to repeat, and they have. I've had families repeat up to 3 times.
Right. So I think that you charge $60 for a 6 week group call today. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to get there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were just having that conversation about a social skills group we'd like to start for like 9 to 12 year olds or whatever. And even though we have grant money for it, we want people to show up and to see it through. The biggest benefit for the child, of course, is going to be to see the whole thing, the whole course through. And so we were thinking of charging $20 a session. However, if there was any financial need, then not a problem, because it is grant funded.
Exactly. There's always sliding scale, but that, you know, people that can afford, because a lot of times people come to your programs who do have the means to pay $60 for 6 sessions. I mean, if you go to therapy, one therapy session is, you know, like $175, but not at your agencies. I know, but just in general. But, you know, that's what I would say, because it's, I think that we're all JFS agencies are going to really suffer if they don't start charging something. Because I think, because Zoom is not going away.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And maybe it would also be a way to get people to show up on Zoom if they've paid.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there's been like a, or there's starting to be a psychological shift. I think when we all transitioned to Zoom, it was felt like, well, you don't have to travel to come. Normally you would have, I would have paid for your airfare and hotel and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, it's reduced or whatever, but now that it is kind of here to stay, your clinical skills haven't changed. Your credentialing hasn't changed and your experience hasn't changed, and you should be paid for the value you're bringing regardless of the platform.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right. Hmm. Lisa, do you have the date in front of you of our next meeting by chance?
No, but I can get it. One second. I'll look it up. Did you have any programs or anything that you were doing? Yeah.
You know, actually interesting. I'm working on our big senior resource fair, which we have, it's now back in person.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But it is out. We have an open air pavilion at our JCC, which was built right before COVID, which was really interesting. And I thought when I moved here, I moved to Raleigh from New Jersey, and I said, why don't they put walls on that building? I thought, this is so odd. But I have to say, you're talking about the JCC has made a lot of money in rentals this year. It's an enormous open air pavilion. It's covered. So dance studios have rented it out. Every basketball league has rented this. I almost had to fight to get 2 days to have events on it. Because it's so busy with rentals that there's just almost no other structure like that. So it's blocking from the sun, the rain. But I did it there with saying it'll probably be okay. It's in October. You know, unless there's like sideways rain coming in. But, and thinking older adults, you know, lately they'd been done with the mask. They're like, they were vaccinated and out on the town and kind of done with the mask. And even talking to, you know, if you're at a resource fair, there is a hearing issue sometimes with the mask, you know, if you use lips to help with your hearing and all the ambient noise. But we may be back in masks. We're back in masks indoors. And I think most places are.
Yep.
So we'll see. So I'm working on that. And actually, I wanted to add that if anyone was on that lot last call we did about someone presented on a supermarket scavenger hunt in Florida. So I'm actually planning it with our PJ library coordinator, and we're doing a big one for our JFS food pantry here.
That's great. That was JCS Miami. JCS.
Yeah. We have a new PJ library coordinator, and she just, like, I told her about it and she's like, oh, let's do it.
Yeah, so, that's fun.
I'm excited. And we're doing some really interesting programming again under that open air pavilion with food insecurity and stations for families to learn about. We don't have an actual pantry. We have, well, our pantry is like a closet, so we can't like have families go into that space. But we're going to do sort of a weigh-in after they go through the supermarket and solve the clues, bring it to the JCC campus. And then there's, we have a whole program set with stations and a passport, and they're going to get Kona ice if they move through the station. So
you mean the kids, you're going to teach the kids about food.
We're going to teach the kids.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So
real good.
And
Raleigh has very creative ideas. You guys have very creative ideas.
Excited, yeah. And it was interesting partnering with PJ Library because they have such a wealth of resources.
Yeah.
That I don't have access to. So you know that there's the communities that have replicated it, some JFSs, but there's also the PJ communities.
Right. So. Is there a PJ Library in Canada? Yeah. Everywhere.
I think it's everywhere.
They've got a great website too. And our resource library, we want to model on the resource library that they have. And so we have now gone into conversations with different kinds of website designers to create that. So stay tuned, because our resource library is the hits. No one can find anything. We still want to ask you for everything. We want to put it in there. And then soon we're going to have a new resource library that's going to make a lot more sense for everybody. So I guess I want to make a plug that if you have anything that you think might be good for any program or community educational programmer to have in the network, send it to me. We'll put it in the library now, but once we get this new plugin, it'll be a lot clearer and we'll be able to pull things a lot more easily.
Oh, that's good. I was going to ask you how to get to those files from Florida.
So does everyone have the network username and everything to get into? You go to the members only section of our network, which is networkjhsa.org, which is our website. And then you go to the members only section, which is on the top, you know, dashbar, whatever it's the dashboard. And then you go into the resource library and the username, you can write this down, is network, capital N, network, pretty easy. And the password, never changes, is all caps, NJHSA, 18, the number 18. And that can get you into our resource library. You can sort by webinars, right? Let's say you want to hear a webinar. You want to hear an affinity group. You can search by affinity group. And then you put in the search bar what affinity group you're looking for. Let's say you come up with food pantry. And then there are around 30 things. You can't find it in the search bar. You're going to write scavenger hunt. Right. And then it'll come up with it because scavenger hunt is in the words of the presentation. Right. So that's how it'll work. But in another, I'm going to say 6 weeks, we're going to have a real resource library where you won't have to do all of that. But for now, you have the tools to do it. And if not, just email me. Okay. Right. Everyone that's has great. My email. So, anything else, Dean? I put in the date, 10:25, 1:30 Eastern.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Can I just ask one question? Sorry. We're thinking of starting a parent education online program. And I wonder if anyone else has had experience with that or has experience with Triple P, which is a specific program. If so, I'd love to chat with you over email or something another time.
What's the name of the program?
Triple P.
What's it stand for?
It's like Positive Parenting Program, I think. It's a program that you can take all online, and you can take it yourself as an individual, or you can sign up to do like a full training, and then you can offer all these already developed modules to your own community. And it's can be hybrid or it can be all online. But if you're a provider of Triple P, then you can do a lot of other things and have access to a lot of information.
Okay, so here's what I'd like you to do. Email me this question, you know, and I will send it out to the Clinical Services Affinity Group to see if anyone's a Triple P provider. And potentially if it's something great, maybe the network can even offer it. You know, so that would be good. If any of you ever have any questions, you know, you should write me and I'll try to send it out. And you never know who has what. So, you know,
I have one last one before we get off. When I was thinking we were going to do a little more in-person programming, I was thinking I should research better technology for hybrid programs beyond just putting a laptop on the speaker and has anyone gotten very far with that and even looked for any grants to fund it or are you planning just to put a camera on your speaker?
No, but we're finding the problem. And we're absolutely finding the problem with hybrid meetings, particularly, especially auditory more than the camera seems to be the challenge, right? So we're looking into it, but I don't think we have anything to share yet.
Okay. There are 360 cameras that I want to say are like $100 or so, if anyone knows about this, but like you put it on your conference table and they're good with like audio 360 and visual 360. So it does like the camera view is like too widescreen. It's hard to explain, but like kind of like we're like this 3x3, and here it just does two, but two very wide because it's like 180 view one way and then under it another 180 view. So that's very popular for hybrid meetings or services.
Huh.
You know, so I would just look up 360 camera like on Amazon.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So it's like a wide angle, but two 180s. And Zoom handles it very well. Google Meets handles it well. With the hardware, the drivers, it knows what to do.
Okay.
And I want to say 100, 150, sorry.
Yeah, and have you used them at your agency?
I have not used them, but I've seen them. I've seen other agencies use them. So that's why I don't have like a name or brand to suggest. But Amazon's really good about like reviews, and you can read how other people are using them and picture examples of how it looks in Zoom. But I have seen them used, and they're really neat. It's really like, it's a little stretched. So like the heads are like, if you have like 10 people in a room, you know, it's like five little heads on the top and five little heads on the bottom, but at least you can see everyone in real time. You can see their reaction, so they don't have to step in front of the camera.
I think that sounds fantastic. I mean, honestly, someone asked it and you got an answer. I'm going to look into it as well, even though we've given up our offices at NJHSA, but because we're always on Zoom, right? We used to go into the office just to get into our own separate offices, shut the door, and be on Zoom. So it didn't really make any sense. But I think it's a really good idea. You know? So maybe if we look into it and it works, maybe the network could get some sort of a discount. I don't know.
Let us know, Lisa.
I'll bring that up with Ruben, because I think that is something that probably most agencies want. If they ever go back into board meetings. Okay, the 360 camera. Okay, I'll keep you guys posted. You never know. Okay, thank you. Anything else, Dina? Are we saying goodbye? Are we saying Shana Tova? It's the holidays in 2 weeks. It's unbelievable that we're already here again. But hope everyone, if they celebrate, has a wonderful new year.
You too.
You too. Good to meet everybody.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.